Dr. Janik asked me to present on high tunnels. I was under quite a bit of dilemma. That's because high tunnels in this country don't have a long history yet. So if you ask about, you know, hanging in the middle, neither here nor neither there, for example, you know, high tunnels are not greenhouses. High tunnels are not field production. So we are kind of hanging in the middle. So it felt like sometime when my wife asked me, do you hear what I say? So if I say yes, then I'm in trouble because I'm not doing what she asked me to say. And if I say no, then I'm in trouble because I have selective hearing. So I was like, okay, high tunnels. Okay, I need to come up with a history. So with that, I titled it as Revolutionizing Specialty Crop Production in the United States, because that's what we are experiencing. Since 1950s, when they started working on high tunnels, it took us about 40, 50 years to realize the potential. But now we are realizing it. Midwest, South, Northeast, many of the young growers, many of the existing growers are adopting high tunnels. So the outline of my talk, I'll talk about the history of season extension, specifically focusing on season, the definition of high tunnel, of what is a high tunnel, some advantages, different types and sizes, and what we are using in our landscapes, some research initiatives which are there across the country to focus on specific topics within high tunnels, and finally some limitations and challenges of how to progress this field, this science forward. So I do have that picture, Chris, which you had from Versailles, which talks about orangeries. And before that, in 500 BC, they talk about this Garden of Adonis. And when I read more about this, what it said, the crux of the story is, so in ancient time, like 500 BC, women used to celebrate the Greek character Adonis by going on their rooftops, dancing and singing, and they celebrate his birth by seeding lettuce and fennel in terracotta pots, like broken terracotta pots. So you would wonder why broken terracotta pots. That's because the seeds would stay there viable for an extended period of time. So it's like season extension. The life of the seed is extended. And so the concept of season extension has been there from 500 BC. Chris showed us some great pictures of the orangeries, and he explained a lot about, so they're kind of the predecessor of the high tunnel, a little bit behind. You see the Versailles picture here. You see the orangery of Washington, George Washington. That's from Virginia. So he also had his own orangery, which I believe you can still visit. Jules was courteous enough to pass me some more pictures of ancient ways of extending season, you know, bell jars, cold frames, hot beds, you can see on that corner. And so it dates back way into ancient times when season extension was in play in some form or the other. In modern context, if you look at some of the backyards, community gardens, they also use those cold frames, some of these bell jars here on individual plants, so it's still there when we go around our neighborhoods. And the way it progressed from there was from the 1948, so after the World War II, a lot of push in terms of building greenhouses and structures to extend the growing season protect the plants from adverse weather. So polyethylene greenhouses came into being late 20th century. Another transformation, which is called plastic culture. If you think of it, you know, in greenhouses, in high tunnels, even in field production, we have a lot of plastics in play. Now, even further, we are looking into biodegradable plastics. So a lot of advancement and development in building plastics and things that made of plastics happened in that late 20th century. But the credit developing and creating high tunnel goes to Dr. Emory Emmert. He was at University of Kentucky, and this is from somewhere in 1950s when he started working on, they called it field houses, not greenhouses, so kind of in a greenhouse in the field, so that's what the name suggested. But this is a picture of Dr. Emmert out there growing some leafy greens. And when I dug more about him and tried to learn more about him, it was interesting to know that he was born in Iowa. So me and Chris, representing Iowa State University, it's fitting that we are giving these talks, right? So he was born in 1900 in Iowa, after which University of Kentucky recruited him in the Department of Horticulture in 1928, where he started focusing on, you know, vegetable production. But the actual invention of high tunnels happened only in 1955. The field houses are called by different names. You can see here, vegetable growers call them high tunnels. Nurseries, maybe Quonset structures. Bedding growers would call cold frames. So they have been used or used in and with different terms interchangeably. Surprisingly, the high tunnels, even though they were invented in 1950, 1955, they didn't take off here in the United States. Primarily because of the reason of the development of interstate system, you know, the robust transport system we have. If somebody in Kentucky wanted to have cucumbers or, let's say, squash or melons, they don't have to grow it there. They can just ship it from Florida within 2 or 3 days. So the local markets were not being developed because of the development of the interstate system. But that was not the case in Europe and Asia. There, they had a burgeoning population, especially in Asia, and so they wanted to adopt the system so they can grow more food and feed more people. And so that's why we are still behind when it comes to high tunnels. And I got a real example of it when I visited China in 2013. I'll show you a picture of some things which I saw there, but the definition of high tunnel. These are also known as hoop houses, plastic covered. Crops are grown in the ground, not on benches or in pots. And again, they didn't receive much traction in the United States until 1990s. These are Chinese solar greenhouses. These were also very popular. Even now, they have been using these structures there for a long period of time. And here you can see the sun is heating the crops in the daytime. The wall behind absorbs all that heat and slowly radiates that heat in the night. So this was their form of high tunnel before. If you go now, you can even still see some of those Chinese solar greenhouses in play. But this was the shocking part. So this is in 2013. We visited many areas, Hangzhou, Pujiang, Shanghai, Beijing, and one of the growers took us to this greenhouse, the high tunnel. This was a very low-cost alternative to our high tunnels, what we have here. Maybe because they don't have those 50-mile-per-hour straight-line winds, which we have in Iowa. But this is very low-cost. There is some metal, you can see here. But otherwise, it's bamboo. The structure is made of bamboo. You can see bamboo sticks in the middle also. If you look at the side, this is what it looks like. They just open the vents for the circulation to happen. But again, really, really low cost. Not much of an investment. But because of this low-cost technology, what they have done, so this is our drive from Shanghai to Beijing. And we are on this interstate. I'm going to remove the volume because you don't want to hear the bus roaring there. But maybe it still comes. But you can see on both sides of the interstate, however far you can see, you only see high tunnels. And I was really surprised. I mean, just like seeing corn and soybean in Iowa, right? You look here, corn, soybean. Look there, corn, soybean. So it's the same analogy. You just have high tunnels after high tunnels. And the bus is driving at about 60 miles per hour. This video is a 2-minute video. So 2 miles of 60 miles per hour, all you see are high tunnels. Nothing else. So it feels like we are historic right now, right? United States. I mean, China is way ahead. And not just one side, but both sides of the road. So that's the advancement there. To talk about some advantages of high tunnels, which we are experiencing here, definitely weather protection. We talk about season extension. Crops can be grown almost 4 weeks early in high tunnels. We have improved yield and quality because we have no rains, so less diseases. Talk about increased revenue. I'll show a small calculation I did based on some of the research at the research station in Iowa State. And the most important thing which I like about these high tunnels is that it's an entry point for young growers. In Iowa, you have farms that are passed from generation to generation, 1,000-acre, 500-acre farms. But if young generation want to go and farm, they don't need a big area from their dad or mom. All they need is maybe an acre or two, and they can set up a high tunnel and get into the specialty crop production system. So I think it's a great opportunity for young growers to capitalize on using high tunnels. Market expansion, labor efficiency, so a lot of benefits. So again, now I'm kind of from the history, kind of coming back to the middle of it, of where we are. USDA NRCS has done a great job providing funding to our growers as a cost share. Many high tunnels have been built based on 2017 USDA Ag Census. You know, the production under glass or other structures has gone up from 2,250 acres to about 2,584 acres. This is strictly vegetable crops. So a lot happening. With high tunnels, farmers are experiencing, many benefits, increased marketing opportunities. They are using high tunnels not only as a high tunnel to grow crops, but also sometimes as a greenhouse. So this is early in the spring. Growers are using their high tunnels with some supplemental heating to raise their transplants. And after that, the high tunnel will be changed into a high tunnel. Or depending on where they are, they might have half of it as a greenhouse-like structure and the half will be soil. Just a quick math from a 30 by 96 high tunnel, a gross revenue you can make using tomatoes and pepper and how early you can produce those crops. 36 days in case of pepper, 28 days in case of tomatoes. So that's all added revenue for a farmer from a 30 by 96 high tunnel. So since we are talking about high tunnels and the history and how they have evolved, they have different structures are available, different styles, and different areas. So in this case, the most common ones are the Quonset type and the Gothic types. There are pros and cons of both of those. The Gothic one, you can go all the way till the edge to grow your crops. Not the case with Quonset. Then we have some multi-bay ones too, which are more common in the Pennsylvania region, where more specialty crop production takes place. We have evolved, just like Chris showed those pictures, from crawling or stationary high tunnels to movable high tunnels. So that's another revolution that's happening. I see Carrie Reward back there, and Carrie and myself are working with a few companies to try to promote this and show our growers of how these movable high tunnels work in their production systems. This would be a movable high tunnel. You can see some the wheels back there and rails, so the tunnels can be moved. So this is at one place in the spring, and later on when the production is over, in this case the spring crops have been harvested, it will just be moved up into this area. So the growers can, be more flexible with their planting schedule. Now, high tunnels have also evolved from their predecessors or smaller forms of high tunnel. This is a caterpillar tunnel, just as the name suggests, like a caterpillar. Low cost, it's easy to install, easy to move, but again, restricted in terms of how tall of a person. Maybe Dr. Janik might not be able to enter there, but I can. So he cannot grow his tomatoes there. But it's easy to move, again, low cost. So many of the growers have gone into that direction as well. This is the recent 2017 USDA Ag Census data. And just focusing on tomatoes, what we have deciphered from the data is between 2012 and 2017, the open field production of tomatoes have gone down. There's a reduction. Whereas the control, not the control environment, but high tunnels, greenhouse, under structures, the production of those crops, tomatoes under those structures, have gone up. So we are seeing a trend where more and more greenhouses and high tunnels are being utilized to grow specialty crops, especially vegetables. That was a survey back there done in 2015 in Iowa to focus on what crops are growers growing most, and tomatoes rise up to the top, and many of the high tunnel growers grow tomatoes. This is the Midwest data between Iowa, Kansas, Missouri, and Nebraska. Almost 90% of the growers who use high tunnels grow tomatoes. They have grown tomatoes. The next crop would be lettuce. Some other crops that are more commonly grown, peppers, cucumbers, leafy greens. So there are a variety of options when it comes to using high tunnels for crop production. I thought I'll put some pictures here. And I know we are kind of in a desert area, Las Vegas, so the leafy green will help us to get some moisture. Romaine lettuce trial. Lettuce grows really well inside high tunnel. This is from the spring of 2019 this year. Cucumbers, they do excellent inside a high tunnel production system. And why not grow cucumbers when growers can make good money, depending on whether they use high tunnels or they don't use. So this is the Chicago trade price of a cucumber for one 1x9 bushel carton. You can see the price of that carton is about $20-$24 up here. But as soon as the middle of July hits, that price falls. And that's because the cucumber floods the market. The field production is there. So if a grower has high tunnels, and if they can capitalize on growing cucumbers and selling it at that time, they can make some good money. So there are ways high tunnels are paying off and why growers are using it. Tomatoes, again, a very popular crop that are planted inside high tunnels. Intercropping, we are advancing here in terms of technology, in terms of production practices. It was nice to hear about crop rotation. When Chris mentioned here in this case, they are trying to add more diversity to high tunnels. Oftentimes, this is something which we know it's there, but we kind of neglect it. It's because when we talk about high tunnels, we only talk about vegetables and fruits. But there are cut flowers that are being grown inside high tunnels. You know, bells of Ireland, snapdragons, delphinium, dianthus. Not on a larger scale, but I think there is a market that needs to be explored. I mean, there is value in niche crops. Talk about ginger. This is a grower in Iowa, Eric Franzenberg, and he grows ginger in his high tunnel. I know University of Minnesota has done an excellent job in growing ginger in their high tunnels. There's some publications out there. So, again, there's a lot of potential of using high tunnels and growing baby ginger. Anybody bought ginger from Hawaii, or have you done some ginger research or bought some ginger from Hawaii? Anybody? So if you order your ginger from Hawaii, don't be scared when you see that the source, the website where you buy, the person you buy from, that website is called bikerdude.com. But he sells ginger. So he's one of the one of the biggest growers of ginger in Hawaii, and his website is bikerdude.com. So don't scare, run away. He will get you some ginger. This is, again, back in China, and this was interesting. They are growing grapes inside those structures, those high tunnels. I've not seen grapes here being grown inside high tunnels, but primarily keeping the rain away. Yeah. And so large swaths of high tunnels with grape production. And then finally, I thought I'll just briefly put together a snapshot of some research activities that are happening inside these high tunnels and how we are advancing the use of those high tunnels. You know, there are many issues, many challenges. Grafting is something. I know Carrie's in the room. There are many other folks here who work on grafting. And I just ran a quick metrics on the Web of Science on the term grafting. And you can see how from 1995 to almost 2016, that term is being used more and more. More and more publications are coming out using the term grafting, and many of them are in high tunnels. So this research definitely is making an impact. Many advantages of grafting inside high tunnels: disease suppression, increased yields. You know, many rootstocks are available that can be used to graft. This was a study which we recently did using a couple of different rootstocks. This is, again, inside a high tunnel. focusing on grafting, and one thing I wanted to point out is definitely there's an increase in the number of fruit. These are in high tunnels in Iowa, where we do not have much of a disease pressure. So without the disease being there, we do have some benefits of grafting inside high tunnels. Definitely increase in marketable yield too. Now, high tunnels, even though they are used for season extension, they can serve as a double-edged sword. Think about the month of July and August, when it's exceptionally hot. And if you have a high tunnel structure like that, it's going to be even more hotter inside. So then you have to switch gears from season extension to saving your season by putting some of these shade cloths. A practical question which growers ask is, okay, so what kind of shade cloth should I use? So this is a small trial we did using 30% shade, 50% shade, just to see how the plants respond to these shade under high tunnel crop production. So different shade cloth. And this one we tried different types of peppers. And this is another thing which we are more and more seeing is not just tomatoes, many colored peppers, because there's more value to those peppers, are being grown inside the high tunnel. Again, definitely the shade, the temperatures are going down with the shade. But if you look at the plant physiology, this is no shade. Plants are definitely look a little stressed. That's a 30% shade, 50% shade, more bigger leaves and more darker green. But when it comes to yield, you see that as the shade increases, the yield goes down, which we knew because there's less light. But the interesting factor was, you know, different varieties behave in different manner. So better for growers to know how the high tunnels work and which varieties and cultivars to use inside high tunnels, that would be a benefit for them in their production system. So I'd like to wrap up with some of the challenges. So we know what are the benefits. We kind of got a history of the use of high tunnels in this country. But there are many challenges which await. You know, this is just like how many of you have planted cucumbers in the spring, and you see these cucumber beetles sitting on the fence post. Right? So you plant your cucumber, and the cucumber beetles just come directly to. So some issues with high tunnels, too. You know, we have aphids, thrips, whiteflies. Hornworms, which want their due share, you know, leaf diseases, leaf mold, the yellow shoulder disorder in case of tomatoes, blossom end rot. So there are many challenges that still need to be managed. Again, it can be managed, but a lot of education needed in that area as well. Salt accumulation, that's a big thing because we're applying a lot of fertilizers inside our high tunnels. It's one of the symptoms of salt burn. No crop rotation. So I was interested when Chris brought the topic of crop rotation. This is something which we completely lack inside high tunnels. It's either tomatoes or peppers, both the same families. And in Iowa, we do have some wind issues too. So this was a perfect high tunnel. This is at the Armstrong Research Station in Lewis, Iowa. And there was a wind, you can see a small tornado kind of taking shape there. So I took shelter, definitely. But once that storm had passed, we lost the cover. So some challenges do exist. There are ways, plant more trees, and maybe having the high tunnel closer to a row of trees would help protect the high tunnel, also reduce the velocity of the wind. So this shows that you get about 25 to 50% of field velocity reduction if you are five times the height of the tree. So definitely planting somewhere close would be better. Finally, I want to put a plug out there, and I'm sure you all know about this, that we have got tremendous potential using high tunnels. I know it was more common in the northern tier states, but states, you know, further down south are also utilizing high tunnels for various reasons. It's an engine for local food production. Yeah, we solely don't have to depend on trucking now. We have local farmers, growers who provide food to us through local markets, CSAs. So that's a great way for them and also for the younger generation to put their mark as an entryway to the niche crop, the specialty crop. So I'm glad that high tunnels are working to help them. Just few thank yous to many of the funding agencies that help many of us do our research, and in Iowa especially, Iowa Fruit and Vegetable Growers Association and the PFI grad students. With that, I'll be more than happy to take some questions. Raj.
Sure.
So within high tunnels, the major use of plastic will be the cover, the skin of the high tunnel. We use plastic inside high tunnel like a mulch to grow our crops. Now the mulch one you can avoid, again, by using either a biodegradable plastic or using switchgrass or some kind of mulch to suppress weeds, because that's the primary objective. With the skin, typically you change the skin of the high tunnel every 4 years, unless you have like straight line winds. But maybe developing materials which will be there out for a longer period of time and don't photodegrade that quickly. That would be a solution. That would be a direction to go to, you know, where we are not changing them frequently and limiting the amount of plastics that go out. So again, 4 or 5 years, that's a good amount of life we get out of that plastic. And so not much of a waste coming out every year. But good question. Kerry? So the question is about measuring the PAR inside and outside, and we did that. And in the 50% shade, we were close to 70 or 75%. Because the plastic itself cuts it by 17%, and on top of that, if you have that 50% shade. So we did see that, and that's why we thought, okay, not 50, but 30. So 30 seems to be a happy medium right now. Okay. Well, thanks for bringing it up. Thanks. Yes.
Maybe to add on this system, you use the black screen, and I think you mentioned also something about color. Did you also test a white screen and if that has a more effect?
Sure. Yeah. It's a very good suggestion, using of the white cloth on the top instead of black. And I did have an interest to use white, but for some reason it was not available through many of our vendors, and we had to buy it from a company in Europe. And the price was too expensive. So not that we should not go in that direction, but many of our farmers, the local growers, the easily accessible one is the black one. So that's why we stuck to the black. But I know University of Georgia, Carlos Juan Perez, he does a lot of work with different colors and peppers. But that would be a good direction to focus on, looking at different colors. If no more questions, thank you very much for a patient hearing and being here and not at the slot machine, right?